Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is using TCP/IP-based applications with WebSphere Message Broker. Today's presenters are Vivek Grover, Ming-Sun Buren, and David Brickell. Vivek is a Level 2 Technical Support Engineer and Team Lead for WebSphere Message Broker. His responsibilities include troubleshooting customers' real-time problems worldwide and providing resolution. Ming-Sun has been in WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 support for 5 years, and his responsibilities include investigations, troubleshooting, and testing tasks to resolve customer issues. David has been a member of the WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 support team since September 2008. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Vivek, Ming-Sun, and David.
Hello. Today we'll be going over the following topics. Slide 2, please. TCP IP basics. WebSphere Message Broker TCP IP transport, TCP IP nodes, common TCP IP scenarios, problem diagnosis, known problems, APARs. Slide 3, please. To begin with, Transmission Control Protocol, Internet Protocol, commonly referred to as TCP IP, defines how certain connected devices, like computers, should send and receive data to each other via the Internet. Internet Protocol Suite consists of a set of protocols, two of the most important being Transmission Control Protocol, TCP, and Internet Protocol, IP. The IP suite breaks its methods and protocols into layers. The application layer, which handles application-based interactions. Transport layer, which provides a general application agnostic framework to transmit data. Internet layer, which provides communication methods between multiple networks. And link layer, which provides basic connectivity functions with networking hardware. IP is responsible for moving packets of data. These packets are forwarded based on destination address, known as the IP address. TCP is responsible for breaking up the data into packets to send, as well as combining the packets once received to verify that the data was correctly delivered between client and server, as data can be lost while being transferred. TCP can detect the lost information and will continue to request the data until it is completely received. Slide 4. Every connection using TCP IP is split between server-side and client-side. When a client-side application wants to connect with another application on a different system via TCP, it sends the request to the server-side application. This request uses an IP address and port number. The IP address determines the location of the server. The port number is the line that the server application will be listening to for incoming requests. When the receiving application receives the request, it then sends an acceptance notice back to the client-side application. This handshake procedure solidifies the full duplex connection. Full duplex is a term used to describe the TCP connection, which contains a pair of byte streams, one following in each direction, allowing full communication between the two applications. Slide 5. TCP IP is a fast networking option that requires low bandwidth. It is very useful for small devices and instances where there is a requirement for little data to be transmitted. TCP IP is also simple to configure compared to other methods. TCP IP will maintain the sequence of data as well as check to verify that no data is lost during the transfer. while TCP/IP is good for many things, it does have its limitations. It is non-transactional and non-persistent. There is no built-in security and no standard way of signaling the start and end of a message. Slide 6. Fortunately, when we make use of MQ as the transport mechanism, these limitations can be avoided, as MQ makes up for all of the mentioned limitations. Through the use of the TCP/IP nodes within Message Broker, we can easily integrate this into the broker system. Through the use of the TCP/IP nodes, we can make use of simple port-to-port communications between client and server. Because of how broker works, we can set up multiple TCP/IP connections. These connections can be within the same data flow engine or different data flow engines. Acting as a server application, using broker, we can accept multiple requests at the same time. Whether acting as server or client, these applications can be multi-threaded. Slide 7. On broker, the connection process works much the same way. The server application listens on a local port on the computer that is running the application for requests for connections to be made by a client application. The client application requests the connection from the server port, which the server then accepts. When the server accepts the request, a port is created on the client computer and is connected to the server port. A socket is created on both ends of the connection, and the details of the connection are encapsulated by the socket. The server port remains available to listen for further connection requests. Slide 8, please. Each execution group process contains a connection manager. The connection manager is responsible for making the connections. TCP/IP connections are requested by the client connection manager and accepted by the server connection manager. Despite being able to have multiple client nodes, not node flows per execution group, only one server node per flow can be used per execution group, as it uses a specific port. Slide 9. TCP/IP nodes do not directly create or manage any connections. They acquire them from the connection manager's internal pool. TCP/IP nodes can define the connection details to be used by specifying hostname and port, or the name of the configurable service. The connection manager is created when the first flow using TCP/IP is deployed. It is removed when the last flow containing a TCP/IP node is removed. During a redeploy of existing flows, you may see the connection manager removed and recreated. This is because redeployment involves deleting all existing nodes before creating them again. Each connection has an input stream and an output stream, both of which have two main states within the connection manager, available and reserved. This means the connection is either not in use or being used. Slide 10, please. TCP/IP nodes are split between client and server versions of input, output, and receive nodes. Slide 11, please. The TCP/IP client input node requests a client connection that contains data ready for reading. Until such a connection is available, the node is paused, waiting for the data connections to a remote server application that is listening on a TCP/IP port. This is very similar to a regular MQ input node. The TCP/IP client output node requests a client connection, and if no connections are available for sending data, the output node requests that the pool creates a new connection. If the maximum connections property has not been exceeded, a new connection is created and the data is sent. The TCP/IP client receive node waits for data to be received on a TCP/IP connection and retrieves the data. If the connection is closed, an exception is thrown. Slide 12, please. The TCP/IP server input node listens on a port, and when a client socket connects to the port, the server socket creates a connection for the client. Unlike the TCP/IP client input node, the TCP/IP server input node does not attempt to make a minimum number of connections because the server end of the socket cannot initiate new connections. It can only accept them. The TCP/IP server output node listens on a TCP/IP port and waits for a client node to make a connection with the port. When the client node connects to the port, the server node creates a connection for the client. The connections are not made directly by the node, but are obtained from a connection pool managed by the execution group. When the connection has been established, the data is sent. The TCP/IP server receive node waits for data to be received on a TCP/IP connection and retrieves the data. If the connection is closed, an exception is thrown. Slide 13, please. Multiple configuration options are provided for each node through the most basic, though the most basics are the hostname and port for the client nodes and the port number for the server nodes. Other options that are available include parsing, when and how to close the connection, request properties, connection retry parameters, and instance. More details for these options and what they are used for can be located on the Info Center page for the individual node. That covers the first few sections of our agenda, and the next few slides we'll be discussing common TCP/IP scenarios. I will now hand over to Vivek.
Thank you, David. Hello, everyone. This is Vivek Grover. Let's go to foil number 14, please. So in the next few slides, we're going to look into some common TCP/IP scenarios in Message Broker. As we just looked at the different TCP/IP nodes available in Message Broker and their working, the scenarios, depending on your requirement, would allow you to make decisions on what nodes to use, or it could also be the other way around. So for instance, if you have TCP/IP client applications in your enterprise that you want to connect with MQ, then you could use TCP/IP server input node, a TCP/IP server receive node, or the server output nodes. In a scenario like this, the existing client application would form a connection with the broker using the TCP/IP server node. And this is something along the lines that David just mentioned. You could also have a scenario where you would want to connect, use your existing applications to TCP/IP server applications in your enterprise. And you could use the TCP/IP client nodes, the input, receive, or the output nodes, where the existing application will connect to the broker, and then the TCP/IP client node in the broker can connect to the TCP/IP server in your enterprise and pass the message along. We'll see some of these combinations in a bit more detail a little later. Let's go to foil number 15, please. In addition to the kind of applications you have in your enterprise, scenarios may also be chosen based on the availability or reservations, the reserve status of TCP/IP connections. You can decide if you're going to release the connections or if you want to retain the connection to be used later in the flow. This foil basically lists some of the common scenarios that we see our customers use, you know, quite commonly with respect to the connection stream and the node usage. An example of such a scenario based on the reservation of TCP/IP connection may be something like if you want to configure a server socket so that connections are established and they expire after a specified time, or they expire after the message is processed. That would be something that would be based on the connection reservation. Another example based on connection would be if you need to configure a client socket that would make a desired number of connections, used 100 as an example in this example. So you could actually configure a client socket that would make 100 connections at deployment time or a startup time. You can actually use the property called minimum connections in TCP/IP client configurable services if you want to do that. There is also maximum connections for a client and for the server, depending on how many connections you want to, what's the maximum cap on the connections. Another example listed here is if you need to configure a client node to dynamically call a specific port. All the properties are actually set in the local environment, so you can actually set this port in the local environment and call via ESQL. You can use something like set input local environment dot destination dot TCPIP dot output port and map it to the exact port that you would want to call. Then you can also configure synchronous and asynchronous request reply scenarios. So the connections can be reserved after sending the request and then released once the reply has been received. If you want, you can also configure TCP/IP nodes for SSL using the SSL parameters are on the TCP/IP configurable services that you can utilize if you want to do that. Let's go to slide number 16, please. Right, so since we just talked about the scenarios based on reservations and the availability of connections, it becomes really important to know how this really works. So basically, your connections get created as a node requires them. Each connection has TCP/IP based on, it's a stream-based protocol, so every connection has an input stream and an output stream. And both these streams have an available state and a reserved state within the connection manager. As David just mentioned, the client, the node themselves don't make the connections. The connection manager at the execution group level that makes the connection, and the connection manager keeps these states. So when a TCP/IP node requests a connection for an input stream or an output stream, it is given any connection that is available. If a connection is reserved, it does not get that. So if no connections are available, and if it's a TCP/IP client node, then a new connection will be made. Only if the maximum number of connections has not been reached. That's the parameter that's specified on the node property. And if it hasn't been reached, then a new connection will be made. If it's a TCP/IP client node, and any connection that is in the available state can then be used by only one node at a time. So when a node has finished using it, then the connection is returned back to the pool for reuse, and then other nodes can access it. So just like I mentioned, pools managed at the execution group level. So the execution group can manage all these connections at the connection manager level. You can restrict the access to a stream on a connection by reserving the connection. And if you want to restrict that, there's nodes reserve the connection so they can only be accessed by their connection ID. So if a connection is reserved and the other node wants to access it, can be accessed by their connection ID. So whenever a connection is in the reserve state, no other node can access the stream without specifying that connection ID. So again, for instance, an input node can request an available connection by specifying its ID, and when it has finished reading the data, it puts the stream back to the reserve state. The connections are created when the nodes need them, and they're destroyed when all the flows using them are either stopped or they are deleted. So this foil basically just shows the different options of reserve mechanism. There's leave unchanged, reserve, and release at the end of the flow, and there's a release. All these different options are available for when you're using the reserve mechanism. And you can reserve the connection if you want to process the message stream in a control sequence, for example, a request apply scenario, as we just mentioned earlier in the previous slide, then you can release the connection of streams once the message flow has finished processing. And that's reserve and release at the end of the flow. And then there's release, which basically just releases the connection for the streams, and for the streams it is the connection is released. Let's go to slide number 17. Right, so this slide actually shows a snapshot of the advanced tab of the TCP/IP node property. This is actually common to all the TCP/IP nodes that we have in the toolkit palette. And this determines how the data stream is controlled. We'll just quickly go over all these different parameters. The close connection property specifies when and how to close the connection. So you can select no to leave the connection open. That's actually the default value. But you can select after timeout, which means that it will close the connection when a timeout occurs. So you specify the timeout period. Select after data has been received to close the connection when the end of record has been found. When the data has been fully received and end of record is found, that's when it's going to close the connection. Then there's select at end of flow, and this would close the connection after the flow has been run. Close input stream after a record has been received. This would close the input stream as soon as the data has been retrieved. So if you want to close the input stream right out as soon as the data has been retrieved, you can check that. The input stream modification property would let you reserve the input stream for use only by the other input and receive nodes that specify the connection ID. So the options here, as you can see, is leave unchanged, reserve input stream, then release at the end of the flow. We just touched upon these in the previous slide, but just to go over it one more time, quickly, leave unchanged as the default and would leave the input stream as it was when it first entered the node. Reserve input stream specifies the input stream that can be used only by this node and by other receive nodes that requested by specifying the connection ID. So this is kind of important when you're reserving the connections and you would like to access them, you have to specify the connection ID and you must select the right options here in this node. And reserve input stream then release at the end of the flow, just as the property, you know, it's quite intuitive property, just the way it specifies that this input stream can only be used by this node and the other receive nodes that requested by specifying the connection ID. And after the flow has been run, then at the end of the flow, the input streams return back to the pool, so it becomes available for use by any input or receive nodes. Then you also have the output stream modification. Again, the defaults leave unchanged and then release output stream, and reset reply ID specifies that the output stream is returned to the pool for use by any output node, and the reply ID is passed in the local environment that when it leaves this node. But it is reset for the next record on this connection. Moving on to slide 18. This slide shows a scenario where broker is being used as an intermediary router. You have a client A here that connects to broker on port A, where you have a TCP/IP server input node that is listening on this port. The message stream is propagated downstream and using a TCP/IP client output node, which makes connection with an external server A in your enterprise, that server is listening on port 1, and the message is propagated to the server. So in addition to these scenarios that we just discussed, I have also provided a link to a scenario described in version 7 InfoCenter. This is the expense submission and pricing notification. If you're interested, feel free and read about this real application scenario. It's quite well documented, so I don't intend to cover it in the session. Go to slide 19, please. This voice shows another scenario where you may have different TCP/IP client input nodes that are getting data from different applications and feeding all of it into a collector node that collects these messages and then sends them downstream of this node into the flow to a compute node where you can do further massaging. I use this as the compute node to build an XML message that it received from the collector node output and then deliver it to the queue. This is something that's quite commonly used in the healthcare industry, so just wanted to bring that up here. Let's move to slide number 20. This shows a couple of examples of request reply scenarios. First one is a synchronous routing where you have a TCP/IP server input node that receives a message from a client and then it sends it to the TCP/IP client output node, which will send the request and then wait for a reply to be returned on the same connection. The reply is synchronously received by the TCP/IP client receive node and then it sends it further downstream to the TCP/IP server output node, which would then return the reply back to the client. In the next one is the asynchronous routing. The replies are received asynchronously in two different flows here. So the TCP/IP client input node in the second flow does not wait for the reply to be returned on this connection itself, but it waits, but instead it monitors all the available connections. And that's pretty much all I had for the scenarios. In the subsequent slides, my colleague Minsung will talk about some common problems and the problem diagnostic techniques. So over to Minsung.
Thanks, Vivi. Hello, everyone. In next few slides, I'll discuss about the most common problems that we see in the PMRs, and then I'll show you some tools we can use when we diagnose the problem. Slide 21, please. So one of the most common mistakes or the problem caused by the network connectivity issue or the message flow is not designed properly. We can use NetStat or Telnet to confirm if the problem is caused by the network issue or not, or if it is a generic network issue, then the customer may need to work with a network administrator. By the way, many customers open the PMR because of the server and client are not configured properly. It's mainly because the user didn't understand the client and server concept. So many people think of client and server in the context of HTTP or the web services, where the client sends a request for data to the server and expects some response. But as David explained earlier, this is not true for TCP/IP. Once the connection is made, data can flow either way. It is possible for server to send the data to the client while the client is sending data to the server. For the problem caused by message flow design, we have to collect the server-server trace and then take a look at the sequence of the event. So in slide, you can find the instruction, the link in our info center. And also we can use the trace node to check the detail of the local environment, which is used by the broker internally. Slide 22, please. So NetState is a very simple tool. It can allow us to check the current status of the connection. Depends on the platform, you use the different options, but on Windows, you can use netstate-a and p with a TCP. We can get the output appearing in the slide. Basically, -a will display all the connections and listening ports, and -n will display the address and the port number in numeric form. And finally, -p will show the connection for the specific protocol. So here are the sample net state output with the four very common states. If server input node is deployed X6 group, we will normally see the listen or listening state from the NAS state output. But if there is any other application use the same port number or server info node or you deploy on the other X6 group with the same port number, then you will get some broke error message during the deployment. When server is deployed, the server info node deployed, and then when you deploy the client info node, then you will see the established state on the server side and client side as well. And then close wait. This is indicate passive close. This is normally we see when the connection is closed by the remote application. And if TCP/IP client that's running on the remote server is removed or closed, then NAS state output from the server machine will show the state. And then time wait is what we see on the client side. Slide 23, please. Next is Telnet. Telnet is very another useful tool to diagnose the network connectivity issue. Suppose you confirm that connection state on the server side, but you're still having the issue with the client connecting to the server, then we can use the Telnet. We use the ping to check whether the host is available, but in the ping, you cannot specify the port number, so better use the Telnet. As you can see from the example, issue the Telnet with the host name and port number. If the server input is available, then you will see the blank page on the command line with the prompt. And then also, on the server side, you'll see the BIP3560 information message in the broker syslog. And if it's not, then Telnet throw the error appearing in this slide. Slide 24, please. This is another way to check the connectivity. Using these simple flows, you can drive the TCP/IP flow with the MQ messages. You can check if the node initiated connections or whether you can receive the TCP data or not. And also, using different configuration on the node, you can test how the broker handles the connections. Okay, 25, please. These are the common mistakes that we see in the PMR. And as you can see, these are all related flow design. The first, incorrectly define the message set can cause an infinite loop or wait. As Navivek and David explained, TCP/IP is a stream protocol. In other words, it is reading the data as a stream. So when TCP/IP reads the input data, it reads as a stream and not as a message. Since there's no end signal, so when we use the TCP/IP node, we have to define the end, or we have to let the TCP/IP node to know what it meant by a record or the message. So because of this reason, many users use MRM to define the message, but sometimes they don't carefully design the message set. So, for example, if the user says a message is 100 bytes long, and then it is in fact 90 bytes, then we will wait for the required extra 10 bytes. If we don't receive, we will wait for the time given on the node, and then throw error. And sometimes users do not even think this far, just send the data down the stream, and then expect broker to magically tell the message end. So the point is, you can define the node to use the MRM, but you have to be careful on what you choose. So next common mistake is related to connection management. If we are not reserving the connection correctly or doesn't use the correct connection ID, it can cause any issue. One of the examples is a deadlock. Suppose you have two threads using the same connection, and one thread gets the output stream of the connection and then try to use the input stream, while the second thread gets the input stream and try to use the write to the output stream, then you can get a deadlock. So best way to avoid this is to only use one connection per thread. Slide 26, please. The video already explained this, but this is more, you know, the graphical view and the more higher level. So the reserving connection, this is probably the most complex concept, which we can do with when actually broker put back the connection into the pool, so that another node can use. If you look at the top, you see the default case, which is while we are input node, connection is in use state, but as soon as you hit the dashed line, connection goes straight back into the pool. And at this point, any node or any other node can use this connection. So this is default case. And second most use case will be in the middle one. We release and give it back to the connection manager, but saying that this is a reserved. And that means no other node can use this connection unless they know the connection ID. So until we start finish, this reserved connection will not be given to any other node. In particular, this is very important when you receive more data from the same connection in the downstream. So you have to be careful on using this option. The third case is connection is in use and kept reserved until it gets open node and read again. And at open node, we finish up and put it back to the pool and release it. This is mainly used when we are going to a different flow. Imagine that the first two nodes is in two different flows. You must reserve a stream without releasing at the end of the first flow. So the one of the problem with this approach is when we get an exception between server input and the server output. In the previous case, if the flow got the exception before the releasing the connection, broker will handle the exception and release it. But in third case, you need to have some kind of process to handle the situation because the broker is not going to handle it. So this scenario it can be very complicated. So and also we see lots of PMR related to this. This connection management is well documented in our info center. Okay, slide 27, please. So here's the example. If your broker, the broker application is running on Glide 10 on Spark, then you might need to increase the number of file descriptors. As you can see from the error message, it indicates that additional file descriptors are required. So you can either change the NKSI JVerverse environment variable or to change the limit of the maximum file handlers to the real value. Okay, slide 28, please. So here's another example. Customer reports that TCP/IP flows run for a while, and then throwing BIP 35, 59 seems like the connection leak kind of issue. If you see the real, it's not appearing in the slide, but if you take a look at the real error message, it is thrown by the TCP/IP server connection manager. So basically, it's complaining that it hits the maximum number of connections. So to resolve this, simply we can increase the limit using the maximum connection parameter under TCP/IP configurable service. So using the first command, you can check the current value, and using the NKSI change properties command, you can actually update the value with a higher the value. Okay, slide 29, please. If you see the same error message in the log after the message flow running for a while, then probably the previous solution, just increasing the maximum number of connections maybe not enough. There might be some connection leak on the server side because of this expired connection second parameter. If you run the NKSI report properties command against TCP IP configurable service, you will see the expired connection second. The value of this value of this property is the length of time in second, and it tells the connection manager that how long a connection is kept open without being used. So the value 0 causes the connection to be closed immediately, and the value -1, -1, causes the connection to remain open forever. So the setting the expired connection second to a value other than -1 will allow the connection to close if no more data is arriving. So, and then slide number 30, please. So the previous error, the BIP 3559, is from the server side, and then BIP 3587 is what you can receive from the client side, the client connection manager side. If you get this error, even though you configure the maximum connection number on the server side according to the previous two slides, you may need to check the connection is managed properly on the client side. So here is a simplified example which requires to close the connection after processing each message. It is very uncommon to close the connection after each message being processed, since there will be an overhead in creating discrepancy socket each time. But anyway, if you see this flow, it communicates with the remote application using TCP/IP nodes. The first client output node open the connection and send the request to the remote application, and client receive nodes to read the data from the remote server, and then save message to the MQQ, and last output node just close the connection. If you see the first output node, it is currently configured to close output stream after it sends the request. And second output node is configured to get a connection ID from the default location. And input is to close terminal. The first output node option will cause the second client output node to throw some error, even though it is trying to use the same ID, because it is going to use the same output stream, but it is closed by the previous output node. Then, because so when the second client output node is trying to access the connection using the ID, then broker will throw the error. So instead of closing the output stream in the first node, you need to reserve the output stream until end of the flow. And also, although you configure the first output node properly, if you don't use the correct connection ID from the correct environment tree, then it can cause the connection leak. So what can happen is that if the connection manager cannot find the matching connection ID, the matching connection from the pool, it will leave the reserved connection open, and then we'll give the new connection to the second output node. So the easiest way to check the connection ID or the detail information about the connection is placing the trace node before and after the TCP/IP node with the local environment, the pattern. Okay, so this is end of my portion. Problem diagnosis and common mistake and examples. Slide number 31, please. So here is the resource for the message broker. You can find more information about the TCP/IP nodes or the broker in general. Okay, slide number 32. So this chart includes the links to the number of sites that provide the valuable online resources for WebSphere product. So visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about the upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcast, like the one you attend today, and access previously recorded the presentations. Developer Workshop. offer in-depth technical information. So visit webspherenusergroup.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users off the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view the PMRs online. The My Notification link on all the product support page lets you sign up for the weekly email update for products of the interest to you. Okay, now I'll hand it over to the Joseph to cover the remaining slide and the Q&A session.
Thank you, David, Ming-Fan, and David for a wonderful presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
Our first question comes from Anthony Titus. Your line is open.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a question regarding the practicality of these nodes. I know Vivek was mentioning it was using in healthcare. Can you please give a little bit explanation what type of application or how we can use in broker these nodes?
Hi, Anthony. So if I understand your question right, you're asking how are these nodes used in the industry?
Right. What type of application or how, I mean, just give a practical example.
So in some of the scenarios I covered, like a request reply scenario where you can, and especially if you are trying to connect them, and another scenario where broker was being used as an intermediate router, you're trying to, if you have a scenario where you're trying to connect an application, a client application to another server, and you're trying to massage something in between, broker can be used for that purpose. In a healthcare example, as I mentioned in one of the scenarios, this was something I found, I think, working with a customer where you have these different TCP/IP client input nodes that are receiving real-time data from different beds in the hospital, and collecting all this, collating data into the collector node, and then doing further processing in the compute node to do further massaging. Again, I'm kind of touching upon these, not going into very nitty-gritty details, but I mean, just to kind of give you a little idea about how you can use and implement these nodes in your specific environment. A lot of it comes from your need. A lot of it comes from the applications you have in your enterprise. So I don't know. Does that help?
Yeah. Thanks, Vivek. I just want to get some feel that I think you explained well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Chandrayala Pantula. Your line is open.
The broker, so when we are using these TCP/IP nodes, what is the transactionality? What kind of transactionality we are going to get? Is it going to behave like the same way as we are using the MQ and the SOAP nodes, where anything fails in the, in the downstream, is it going to roll back, or how it's going to behave?
Okay, so I mean the TCP/IP operation is not, it's not a transactional. But if you set the transaction mode in the input node, then you can expect the same, the behavior and in any other, the flow. So if you have any exception during in the downstream, then you can roll back and then try again from the beginning.
So basically, that means that is when we don't require a transactionality, then we got to use or this is the option we have, right?
Right.
So this is Vivek. The only property that we have on the TCP/IP nodes that just sets the transaction mode to yes or a no, but TCP/IP nodes in general, they're not really transactional. You cannot be transactional, but this is the only property that we have.
And how does it going to work in the, when I deploy this flow as a multi-instance? Do we have that multi-instance facility at least?
Yeah, so multi-instances is a broker-level concept. So any flows, any nodes that are in there, would broker covers that.
Perfect. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from FJ Brandelik. Your line is open.
We saw the standard TCP/IP communications. What you did not add is how do we make those secure, like SSL and whatnot?
Yeah, so I didn't really go into that scenario because that the configuration of SSL itself would be a lot more, would cover a lot more detail. Unfortunately, we're reserved for just an hour-long session here, but just to kind of cover the SSL, there's TCP/IP node configurable services which defines these SSL properties that you would configure, but the SSL itself, the certificates, you know, your key stores, they're all configured at the same execution group, COM, IBM, JVM manager, PKI infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So you would define your key store same as you would for a SOAP node, you know, or even HTTP input nodes for that matter.
So it's done through configurable services, like when you configure a web service with SSL.
Yes, so there is the configurable services. There is a configurable services for the client, TCP/IP client and TCP/IP server,
mm-hmm.
And there are some SSL parameters that you can tune there. But as far as key stores are concerned, you know, they are configured at the same execution group, mm-hmm. on IBM JVM manager level. So your execution groups are still going to point to the key stores that would have the TCP/IP nodes deployed, and the SSL parameters are configured at the configurable service level.
Okay.
We have no further questions.
Thank you, Jackie. And it looks like the questions in the web conference has already been answered through the telephone. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.